Blog Talk Radio.
And good afternoon, or evening, or morning, wherever you are. Welcome to Rave Wave, Rave Reviews, Book Clubs, Rave Waves, Blog Talk Radio Show by the Book. I am your host, Beam Weeks, broadcasting live from Lansing, Michigan, USA, amongst the snow. This segment of By the Book is being sponsored by RISA, the Rave Writers International Society of Authors. If you would like to know how to get your own commercial to air during one of our shows, just visit the Rave Waves tab on the RRBC website for info. It's a fantastic way to promote your books. Joining us today from Heartland, Maine, USA, is the author of the poetry collection, My Maine, Poetry and Photography Collection, Betty Stevens. Listeners, if you have any questions or comments for Betty, please feel free to join in on Twitter by using the hashtag RRBC by the book. Once again, that is hashtag RRBC by the book. We will also be opening the phone lines to callers who have questions or comments for our guests. However, you must have pre-registered your phone number with us in order to participate via phone. Thank you for joining us today, Betty. All of us here at RRBC and RISA are so glad to have you with us.
Well, I'm just delighted to be with you today, Bean. It's a beautiful day up here in Maine where it's awfully cold, but the sun is shining, and it's getting higher every day.
I know all about the cold, but off the air we were talking, and you're sitting at 15. I'm 10 degrees warmer. I'm at 25, but let me tell you, that's a warm spot. That's a high temperature for the week so far for us. Yeah, I'm a summer guy, personally.
Oh, there's nothing like summer.
Yeah, warm weather and blue skies. We got gray skies here today. But let's get the ball rolling here. Let's introduce you to those who may not know you. I've had you on the show before, but I think it's been a couple of years. So let's find out, who is Betty Stevens, the person behind the author?
Well, Betty Stevens, that's me. I'm a Maine writer, a retired teacher. I've got two grown daughters. I've got grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and I'm living the good life up here in central Maine. We grow our own fruits and vegetables and do that organically. I love living here in nature. In fact, we moved to Maine in 1974. My husband is a longtime Mainer. His maternal roots delve deep into the Maine and New England soil. But I became an official resident of Maine in 1974. And to be very honest, I've lived in other places since and long before, but Maine has my heart. So I'm a Mainer heart. In fact, I went
well,
to the local.
That's fantastic.
I walked into the local library a couple of weeks ago, and of course, when I go into the library, I look for the kids. I ask them what books they're reading, sit down, talk to them, and one of their parents came over and had recognized me from a local program. We do free reading program carnival for the kids every year, and asked me if I was a Mainer, and I told him my story. He says, "Oh yeah, you're a Mainer." So now I'm officially a Mainer. But
so,
it's really wonderful. You're marvelous.
Yeah, I'm curious about, you say you grow your own fruits and vegetables. So what all do you grow up there in Maine?
Well, we have apple trees, plum trees, pear trees. Let's see what else we have out here. We've got blackberries, raspberries, strawberries, and all different varieties. Let's see, we've got a wonderful patch of asparagus, and that's one of my favorites. It's absolutely marvelous to have fresh asparagus. Tastes nothing like from the store. And then we just grow, you know, regular vegetables and store most of those, jams.
Yeah,
awesome.
I'm with you on the fresh asparagus. I'm not a fan of the when I was a kid, my mother used to cook it in from a can,
Right.
But you get that fresh stuff and it's sauteed. Oh, that's really good. I never liked the canned stuff, but the sauteed fresh stuff, that's really good. All right, now the book we're going to discuss today, My Maine, is a poetry and photography collection, and we'll get to the book itself in a moment. But first, how did this collection come about? Were these poems written specifically for this book, or are these pieces originally written for other outlets?
Well, actually, I started writing Maine haiku in 1994 when I took my first creative writing class. Before then, I was in the business world for years, so it was all business writing. But I did, I took the creative writing class because when I first moved to Maine in 74, it was a year later, and I wrote a couple poems, sent them into, you know, big-time newspaper in Maine, got a rejection notice. I still have that notice, and I kept those poems. I knew one day I was really going to write some poetry. And so anyway, 94, I started writing poetry, and that's when my teaching career began. I started teaching with my second career. And so anyway, I was really fond of haiku because it was so simple. There was a formula, but it was very, very challenging, and I knew that it would be of great use in the classroom for teaching kids all sorts of things that with literary devices, rhythm, rhyme, getting them to love language. So that's when I started writing some Maine, of course, haiku, and I've written it for my blog over the years. But I've always had in mind that I wanted to do a whole collection as sort of my love letter to the state that means so much to me. So I started gathering things together and kind of trying to organize them about a couple of years ago. And I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with them, you know, how I was going to put it together. But I wanted it to be a story. And, of course, Maine is famous for its seasons, for its seafood, for its beautiful landscape, mountains, fields, forests, ocean, you know, the diversity of it all and the diversity of the seasons. So it took me a long time to put everything together and to fill in the spaces. And believe it or not, it took me, I would say, almost a year after I started initially putting things together and deciding, well, I'm going to do a book. And I thought, well, I can't do a Maine book of haiku without having some pictures. And, of course, I take my camera wherever I go, so I had to hunt through pictures and decide which ones I was going to use with the collection because I wanted to give readers, whether they were Mainers or whether they were from away, a sense of what my Maine was because that's the name of the book is My Maine. And, of course, everybody's Maine is probably a little bit different, but basically I wanted to give them a taste of what Maine was to me.
Okay.
And just to give you an example of haiku.
Well, here's the thing. We're gonna talk about the book itself here in another question or two. So we'll hold that off. My next question, though, would be, as you mentioned, you're a retired school teacher and a children and family advocate. And I know you advocate for childhood literacy. Does this ever factor into character creation and development of your stories or your poetry?
Yes, it does. It is woven through all of it. Basically, I'm a teacher at heart. I'm doing presentations now. I just started doing that in October. Go to libraries and organizations and teach. And in fact, I've got a couple homeschool groups that I'm going to be doing poetry classes for because that's what's, you know, as much as I love it, I want other people to love language, to see the beauty of it, to see the beauty of a state, to see the beauty of a flower, to see characters, real characters in a historical fiction novel, to see themselves in a book about a monarch butterfly who's a little caterpillar who wants to fly and gets laughed at. So everything, the whole premise behind everything, I guess it's that little teacher in me that wants to share those things with others.
Teachers are some of the best people in the world. They're some of my greatest mentors that, you know, that reached me back in the 70s that I still carry what they taught me back then. Okay,
yes,
now,
say,
go ahead.
It's kind of, you say that because I just want to share that I had a fourth grade teacher who introduced us, the class, to poetry. And I guess that's when I really fell in love with poetry, was when I was in fourth grade. And of course, I've been reading it ever since.
Yeah, I've had teachers that introduced me to the love of reading, and then my third grade teacher to the love of writing, which we got to work on short stories and whatnot, and that's where I got my love from. And that's, you know, 45 years ago, and it's still with me.
Right.
Now, we're going to talk about the book. Since this program is called By the Book, tell us about My Maine, Poetry and Photography Collections, and why our listening audience should rush out and buy it. And let me just interject here. I've read the book and I've reviewed it, and I did the review of it on Sip and Review. And I love this book. I'm not super fanatical about poetry, but this, I mean, you paint these beautiful pictures with your words, and then you have photographs to go along with it. So tell us a little bit about the book from the author's side.
Well, what I wish for my readers is for them to discover the magic and majesty of the Pine Tree State. There is just so much here. Our state is, you know, unbelievable. We have 89% of it. The book says 83% of our state is forested. That was in 2012. And of course, I keep researching. I'm constantly researching everything. And today, we're the first state on the contiguous U.S. or continental U.S. has the most forested land, which is 89%. And to me, it's amazing. When you drive into Maine, we used to come up from New York and drive into Maine, you get to the state line and everything is different. You're in a whole new world. And I wanted to give a peek into that world to my readers, and just to remind my Maine friends what a wonderful place we are, just privileged to be able to be part of every day.
Okay.
The book itself, I have 150 haiku poems total, so you go through the seasons, plus I have Maine Pines and People, which is basically, it's like using parallelism or personification to compare the Maine Eastern Pine Tree with Maine people. And that's a very heartfelt to me, because Mainers are among the most marvelous people on the face of the earth. They are just, they're precious people. They're very unique, just like the state that they live in, just like the pines that are represented on their flag.
Yeah, it's definitely a unique state. I mean, it's where it's situated on that far up the East Coast. We're going to take a moment here, and we're going to read some comments and some questions from Twitter, so we don't get too far behind on this.
Okay.
Ronnie Deshay. She's out in Washington State. She says, wow, it's cold where you both are. Yes, it is. Physipathan, she's in India, in Mumbai. She's got a statement and a question for you. She says, it's always a pleasure to grow your own food. And she says, Betty, ma'am, which is the oldest tree on your land?
Well, on our land, I could not say, but we planted our trees here, the trees that we planted. We bought this particular property in 2000 while we were out in California, because we knew we wanted to come back to Maine to retire. So in 2001, my grandchildren were little tiny tots, and we planted our fruit trees then. So they would be 19 years old this year, but there are trees on the property that are probably, they're not hundreds of years old, because a lot of Maine was burnt over in the 1947 fire. But I would say, and of course, people also, kept their lands off every now and then to get money to pay their taxes. Believe me, this is a unique state. It is unique, and we have unique people who are very pragmatic and industrious. But I would say probably the oldest tree on our property is probably in diameter about 3 feet or 1 yard. And I would say that one is probably, maybe 150 years old.
Okay.
Would be my estimate. But the
That's
whole property is not. And let's see. We have about 2 miles of trails. We have our field out back is, I'd say about 7 acres. We have 37 acres of property. So the other 30 acres, we have all trails that my husband keeps groomed, and he's made most of them because they used to have, they used to do maple syrup up here. Most of the maple trees are gone now, but we still have the old sugar shack, and there's a picture of it in the book. That little building in the book is our sugar shack. So it's unique. We can snowshoe out there, take the kids out there. Everybody had snowshoes. I mean, the pure wonder and magic of taking your grandchildren through the trails in the winter on a sunny day is better than going to Disney World.
Well, I'll agree with you there. We can get back to some of these comments here. Shirley Slaughter, she's up in my neck of the woods. She's over in Detroit. She says, Betty, I am an organic eating person. Now I have become a plant eater. I don't always have a chance to pick my fruits and vegetables, so I do what I can to eat as pure as possible. There's some pretty good farm markets here in Michigan, so that's where I get a lot of stuff from.
Isn't that wonderful how many people are going organic these days? Realizing that brings me back to the problem with the monarch butterfly, why I'm a conservationist.
Yeah, we're going to get to that, too. We're going to get to the monarch butterfly.
But
so
anyway,
we don't want to jump ahead.
Okay, good enough. I get excited
Yeah, I do my due diligence putting together the script here. We're going to knock out a few more of these because these comments are really starting to pile up. Guy Worthy's question to you is it easier to write poetry when you're snowed in?
I don't think so. Because, I mean, yeah, you have more I think you have more time, but you're not out there watching every little chance in the outdoors. So I think, I guess in a way it might be winter was the time when I put the book together. Okay, those were the times that gave me an opportunity to really do my research. And when I'm talking about research, I'm talking about things as simple as using a dictionary and a thesaurus to find the perfect words. This might seem very elemental to many people, but it is so, so important. I mean, it reminds me of Charles Schulz and Snoopy banging his head at the typewriter saying, what on earth? Sometimes it takes hours to find the perfect word. So I like to teach my students and the people that come to my presentations, my book presentations, about finding the perfect word. So there I go off on another tangent. But yes, these are wonderful questions, and I just thank you all for calling in, for going on Twitter. It's marvelous to hear from you.
Oh, indeed. As a writer, you're always searching for the perfect word. I'm with you. The thesaurus gets a workout I don't want it to be boring and plain. You spruce it up, whatever. You want that perfect word to make the perfect sentence, which becomes the perfect paragraph, the perfect chapter, and ultimately, hopefully. Fiza Pathan, she says, Maine is beautiful for its seasons. She's quoting you. Now she says, now I want to be in Maine. Mumbai in India is hot 365 days a year.
So you should just take a vacation and come and visit us because you will just love it.
Amen. Ronnie Deshay says, when it comes to Maine, I'm all about the seafood.
Oh, yes. Lobster, the shrimp, the scallops, and fresh haddock. Oh, yes. I could eat that every day, but no, we usually have it maybe once a week.
Ron Yates, he says, wow, Maine is 90%, 96% forest. Amazing. And,
yeah, 89.
Okay, 89. And Mary Adler, she says, when we visited Maine many years ago, we were struck by its beauty and had scones in the Arcadia Park. Love Maine.
Oh, yes. You had popovers. You had popovers. Well, they may have scones there, too, but they're famous for their popovers at Jordan Pond. Yes. But it is marvelous, and I hope that you will check out my website because I'm looking for people who have been to Maine or live in Maine to contribute to our Maine's birthday celebration. We're celebrating our 200th birthday, March 15th, 2020, but I'll be highlighting and celebrating Maine's birthday all during the whole year of 2020. So anybody out there, you want to join me? I would love to have you. You can email me. You can just go on my website and browse around, and you'll find out how you can enter. And I've had some wonderful entries already.
Well, fantastic. Happy birthday to Maine.
Yes.
We'll go back to Twitter here in a little bit, but let's go back to the questions here. Now, you've written in both nonfiction and fiction books, and you do it quite well. Do you have a preference? And is there a difference for you as a writer between the two in your creative process?
I really, that's a hard one. I really enjoy both, and I guess it's just however the muse strikes, you go with it. You know, you get an idea, and it may be for a children's book, which, of course, you're using, where you're using animals and like a butterfly, like Amazing Matilda, to teach a lesson to children. So it's based on fact. In fact, historical fiction that's based on fact. And I don't know, it's just, I just love writing it. You know, you just get this idea, like I got the idea for my Maine just because of my love of the state. And when I decided to put this together, I didn't even realize that Maine was going to be celebrating its bicentennial, you know, at that very soon, because I've been putting it together for a few years. So it just worked out marvelously. And I also like writing, you know, just writing like little notes to people, popping little notes in the mail, and using, to encourage people or whatever, but maybe to write a little poem. So I think I absolutely love poetry, but I love writing books too. You know, regular books, fiction, nonfiction.
So you're a writer, a true writer at heart. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, you might say, I call myself a nugget writer. So if you follow my blog, you'll see that I don't have 2,000 words or 1,500 words on a blog post. I guess maybe I get that from poetry, writing poetry. I don't know. But I like to keep everything, I like to say a lot in a very small space so that people can really grasp what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
You know, that they'll really
okay.
get to the theme.
All right. That makes sense. I mean, Twitter is a prime example of that. You can say a lot with just a handful of words. Now,
right.
We're at the point here where we're going to bring up this, that you're a member of the RBC community. How has this impacted being a member of RBC? How has this impacted your journey as a writer?
Oh, well, I think it's really been a great encouragement to me. I joined as a very new writer. It was Catherine Treat who invited me to RRBC. And, you know, putting out feelers, not knowing what to do as a really newly published indie author. And I tell you, the support that you get from Rave Reviews Book Club is amazing. I got it right from the beginning. You know, people would contact me and, make comments. And you get to know these people. It's kind of like getting to know your neighbors. I mean,
yes.
This may sound crazy, but it's really true. Because with your neighbors, you'll never get to know them if you don't stop over, say hi, wave to them when they go by, stop them at the mailbox. Well, it's kind of the same thing with RRBC. You know, you don't just sit there and do nothing and watch what other people are doing. Just jump in there and help people out and give them a little bit of encouragement, because that's what was done for me. And I'm ever grateful for that. So I'm a 6-year member now. Woohoo.
Yeah, you got in early on. Catherine Treat was the one that invited you in. She was a dear, dear soul, and she's missed.
Absolutely.
Now, you're also a member of RISA, and congratulations on that honor. How does it feel to be included in this prestigious organization?
It is a great honor. It is an honor to be part of RISA. I am just, I don't know, I guess I was a bit overwhelmed by it. And there again, the organization is one that supports its members, and it reaches out. It offers so many opportunities. And the same with Rave Reviews Book Club. These are just two phenomenal organizations for writers. And if you're a writer out there, if you know a writer out there, tell them all about it, because it's like having a sturdy right arm to help you out when you need a lift.
A sturdy right arm. I like that. Now is the time we can talk about your love for the monarch butterflies. Now, in your bio, it says that you're a conservationist for the monarch butterfly. Now, what does this entail, and how did you become interested and involved in this endeavor?
Well, I became interested in probably about the same time I took the poetry class in 94. I was also taking a teaching science class at the University of Maine, Orono, my alma mater, university. And I learned that the monarch butterfly was an indicator species at that time. Well, as a little girl living in California, in Santa Clara, California, I had loved monarch butterflies since I was just a tiny little tot, when I was just starting to run around the yard. And I'd catch them. My mother would have little mayonnaise jars all ready for me, and with holes in the top, and I'd put leaves in there and so forth. And we had lots of butterflies, but the monarchs are so unique. Their wings, when the sun hits them, they're like stained glass windows, but they're marvels, and they do indicate how our environment is going. They are, a lot of land has been lost for their milkweed that they need to survive. And so, therefore, I wrote this book. I wrote Amazing Matilda as a children's book so that I could use it. Any teaching that I did was always literature-based. And I didn't find a book. I found all kinds of nonfiction books on the butterfly, but not the one that I wanted, because I wanted Metamorphoses and all that. So I wrote Amazing Matilda not only to teach children about the monarch butterfly and Metamorphoses, but to teach them how to write. And so that, it's sort of an example of, you know, how to, for kids, how to write a story. And I was teaching fourth grade at that time, but I've taught fourth, fifth, sixth, and then sixth, seventh, and eighth ESL classes as well, but all literature-based and interdisciplinary, because I thoroughly believe in that. But anyway, as a conservationist, I grow milkweed in my garden. I'm a citizen scientist, so with Monarch Watch, every time I see a monarch butterfly, I record it in my journal, and I report it by longitude and latitude. They have that information on me. All of the monarchs that I see. This past season, I had 63 monarchs, and
wow.
Got to watch one of them eclude from their chrysalis.
Wow.
So, you know, it's an amazing thing because, you know, with all of this Monsanto stuff, milkweed's getting killed. They're cutting fields and getting rid of milkweed. But the organizations that are out there are getting the word out, and it's doing a world of good. So there again, that's one little thing that I can do. And, of course, I talk to our local children about monarch butterflies, to our adults. You know, and let them know about it. I write monarch butterfly poetry. So there's lots of things that I can do.
Okay.
And encourage others.
Yeah, there's people in this area too where they have, in years past, they talked about planting the milkweed as well. And yeah, Monsanto, I think they're doing a lot of serious destruction. I think a lot of the problems with the beehives and things like that have to do with Monsanto as well.
Have no doubt, because it's all the pollinators. You know, it's really harming our pollinators, which is killing us.
Yeah.
You know, that's so wonderful that people are looking, highly seeking organic food these days. And, you know, they're not afraid to sign a petition about the destructiveness of the pesticides.
Now, we're running low on time, so we're going to jump back on Twitter here and read a few more of these comments. Then we got to pay some bills and run the commercial. But Ron Yates, he says, from California to Maine to retire. Betty, usually it's the other way around, isn't it? Going from winter to sunshine?
Actually, we went from California, we went from Maine, where we had been for decades, to California, and then we got called. Then Dan was working for DOD, and we got called to Virginia, so we went to Virginia. But all along that journey, when we weren't gone long from Maine before we bought another property and, you know, planned to retire here. And yeah, I guess that is a little strange, but when you've experienced the magic and majesty of Maine, your heart will remain there, even if you don't live there. You know, the whole country is beautiful.
Yeah, you go where it feels like home.
Right. I do have something that I'd like to read from my Maine, if you don't mind.
Okay, we have a few minutes, but yeah, as long as this is quick, sure, go ahead.
Okay, this is my tribute to Maine. To Maine and Mainers, it's called the Pine Tree State. Maine pines and people, survivors, resilient souls, standing tall and proud, pragmatic figures, independence their calling, rugged yet limber, growing where they choose while rising ever higher, strong arms branching out, tempering spirits amidst the boundless medley, solid, steady, proud. And that pretty much sums up Maine. You know, besides all the beauty, it's the people.
Yeah, it's you know, that's what makes home. It's the people make home. So wherever the people are, you know, home isn't necessarily where you were born at. People travel and move, and they find their home elsewhere because it's just that place that they connect with. And it certainly sounds like you've connected with Maine. I'm going to read a couple more of these. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to read a couple more of these tweets, and I got to run the commercial here. before we get cut off, but Mary Adler wants to know what kind of tree is your oldest tree? She said maybe I missed it. Did you mention what kind of tree that was?
No, that was a maple.
Okay, a maple. All right. And Sizapathan, she says, Maine is diagonally opposite to Mumbai. We are a pollution wonderland. I'm weeping back here.
You
and,
must come for a visit.
Yeah. Now here, when we get off the air, you're going to want to go back to Twitter and check the hashtag RRBC by the book. Hashtag and click on latest, and then you can read the rest of these comments because there's a bunch of them. We just don't have enough time to get to them all. But what I would like to do now, since we're almost out of time, I want to talk to the listeners here and say it's time to share a few titles worthy of this program, of the name of this program. So buy these books. The first one is Shadowed by Death by Mary Adler, who's out there on Twitter right now. And the second one is Summer of 77, Beaches, Bars, and Boogie Nights in Ibiza by Robert Fear. Now, if these books are not yet listed in the RRBC catalog, you can find them listed in the RISA catalog at ravewriters.wordpress.com. Once again, that is ravewriters.wordpress.com. Categorized by the author's last name. Both are members of the very exclusive RISA, Rave Writers International Society of Authors. And now it is time to share another exciting message about RISA. In fact, this one is going to be about the ongoing RISA revolution. So we're going to pay some bills and tell you a little bit about the RISA revolution.
The RISA revolution has begun. Hello, Rave Reviews Book Club members. Have you written that book or short story you want the whole world to know about? Are you looking for a great way to promote your creative endeavors? Perhaps you're seeking to add some prestige to your body of work. If this sounds like you, come on over to Rave Writers International Society of Authors, or RISA. At RISA, we invite only the very best writers the indie community has to offer. If your work is exemplary and speaks for itself, stop by the RISA website today and find out how you can submit your sample for consideration. We're an exclusive bunch, but we'd love to have you join us. And don't miss the 2020 RISA Revolution blog tour running February 10th through the 19th. So visit us at ravewriters.wordpress.com today.
All right. So there's that. Again, ravewriters.wordpress.com. And take a look at it. Now, I think we got enough time to do another... One more question here, a quick one here. Let's go and see if there's anything on Twitter, if somebody has a question for you. All right, Shirley Slaughter. She asks, is the monarch and other butterflies really in danger of extinction? I get so much information about the imminent collapse of colonies.
Well, they are if... they're certainly in danger, and that's why we need to keep, we need to keep promoting the environment, so that people remain aware of this. That's why, like, the monarch, all the monarch butterfly organizations, and even the wildlife conservation groups, are so important to keep that word out there. And I can't remember quite the year that it was. I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was around 2014, 2015, that the Canadians, the Mexicans, and the U.S., Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. All signed an agreement to help the monarch flyways. And Canada and Mexico are really being pretty good about the support of it. But our government has not been. They have not. Our individual groups, such as state organizations, they're getting right into it. You know, they're making gardens and flyways for the butterflies. So it's individual groups that are making a difference. And we have to keep reminding our federal government about this, that they're responsible too. You know, you're talking about society. These are all pollinators, not just the butterflies, the bees, the hummingbirds. You know, you name it. All of our pollinators need to be protected, because without them, we wouldn't exist. There would be no food to eat. And so thank you for that question.
Okay, and with that, this is where we will leave it. I want to say thank you so very much for taking time out on your Saturday, Betty, and coming and joining us on By the Book.
Well, I thank you so much, and thank all of the callers and all of my friends who are calling in and tweeting and so forth. It's really been great talking to you today, and I hope you all get a chance to visit Maine, because Maine is magic.
Well, I certainly have to get out that way.
Yes. And thank you. Thank you to RRBC, to RISA, and to all of my friends, and to you, Beam, for being such a staunch supporter and helping me in so many ways.
Well, it's my pleasure. It really is. And people, if you enjoy beautiful, beautiful words, beautiful poetry that paints a picture, get a copy of my Maine. I've read it, and I find myself going back to it from time to time as well, and just absorbing some of those words. It's just, there's a beauty there. But it's time to, we got to wrap this up. Remember, listeners, if you miss a live show, you can always find each and every episode in the archive. And again, thank you to my guest, Betty Stevens. And thank you to all of you in the Peanut Gallery on Twitter today, because without you, this show is not quite the same. You all make up this show. You make it happen by tuning in and participating. So thank you all very much. And this is your host, Beam Weeks, thanking you for tuning in today and listening to By the Book, a Rave Waves production. Be sure to join us again soon for another episode of Rave Waves Blog Talk Radio, where all things literary are our passion. And I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. Wherever you're at, stay warm if you need to, or keep cool if you're enjoying some nice weather. Take care, everybody.